Man, that was like the first real weekend I had in forever. Leafs didn't play.
Yeah. First one all season.
And you know what I did? Watched so much sports. I took full advantage and watched NBA playoffs and Blue Jays baseball.
What a weekend it was.
And some UFC. Oh, it was glorious. Ben Ennis is here. It's a good hour on a Monday. What's up, buddy? How we doing?
Doing all right. I as well watched many sports.
Yeah,
I watched some sports with little children, although the littlest of children is not into watching the live sports.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
He played the video games, though, at Rogers Center.
Oh, wait, you actually set him up on the arcade?
Yeah, Pac-Man.
Oh, nice. So what? That's just now good for you. You can go, that's the 500s?
Yeah, well, no, the arcade, like the old school arcade stuff is actually behind the WestJet flight deck. So it's, they just threw him back there. Yeah. So it's kind of annoying because you can't just be like, hey, just stand there and I'll go watch the game.
Because
you can't even, like, you can't leave, like, even 10 feet of distance between you and your child at a baseball game where there's 40,000 people.
So I don't know. That's what I'm saying. This is what they should do. They should have it just basically be like, if you can have a lifeguard at a pool, why couldn't you have a lifeguard for children in a child penned off area?
Like chain them off.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, chain. Be like, all right, do you want to play the game? All right, you got to chain. You got to hook your leg up to this chain.
Yeah.
And daddy will unchain you when you're done.
No, that's not what I
that's
meant.
Prison.
I meant prison. No, I meant like actual child prison at the Rogers Center.
That's just babysitting.
But that's what I'm saying. But it's fenced off and it's just a ball pit because that's all you really need.
Sure.
I was a child once and that was called going to fancy McDonald's. Remember those McDonald's playground pens? That was it.
All
you were in a little bubbled off zone. And there was
McDonald's birthday parties. You used to go to a McDonald's for a birthday party.
Yeah, it was the best. What are you talking about? I remember vividly. Dude, ask me about any birthday party from when I was a kid. I will not remember any of them except for two places. Whenever someone would get the gymnastics gym, that was a fire birthday party. Or McDonald's. I actually got a tour of the McDonald's as a kid. Literally took us down to the basement, and they went, here's the meat, some teenager brought. Here's all our frozen patties in our basement. And here's a milk crate somebody sits on to hack a dart in this basement because it's the 90s, and you can still do that down here. And sweet, I'm locked in down here at the McDonald's in the 90s. I'm telling you, that was the best. That was the absolute best spot to be.
No, I don't disagree with you. Listen, my kids.
What I'm saying is your kids being deprived by not being put in kid jail.
No,
kid jail
is fine. I know. And I know the trampoline park seems better, and it may on some level be better. But no, there was nothing like the simple pleasures of going into the human petri dish that was a ball pit at McDonald's.
Yeah, it's true. Or going up into the tunnels, the slide tunnels.
Yeah.
There's just little tunnels in there, and you just meet some kid, and you would go...
Yeah.
Hey, new friend.
Yeah, we're
that's
friends
trapped
now.
In the bubble.
That, we are now brothers.
Yeah,
in the tunnel together.
We'll probably just have to set up here for a few weeks and live off of fries. We'll
and
be
nuggets.
All right. We'll figure out a new life here in the tubes.
Envious of hamsters to a degree, right?
Yeah,
like that's
totally.
That's
why
all
are
it
they
is.
Always trying to escape those things?
Yeah,
always want to escape
they got
their
it
tube
so
life.
Good.
I know. So many tubes, all connected. Man, hamsters. Are hamsters still a thing? I feel like hamsters were a 90s thing.
No, they're still a thing.
Yeah? Well, I'm not saying they're extinct.
No, okay, I know that.
I just mean, I feel like hamsters were a big deal in the 90s that everybody had hamsters.
No, I think what changed was you no longer being 10 years old.
Oh, okay,
that's
fair.
Like, 10-year-olds have hamsters.
But you think your kids, one of your kids is close to 10, he doesn't want hamsters?
Sure, I'm sure he would die if I brought a hamster home tonight. Are you kidding me?
It
would be the greatest.
Yeah,
like, I would be dad of the millennium if I brought home like a disgusting, ratty hamster.
You can't put your hand in the bags either. It'll bite you, right? So
of course.
To really.
And
you also can't startle
two.
It.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You can't startle it or else I'll have like a heart attack.
Yeah, you got. What? Yeah. I've never heard of that before.
No, yeah, that happens.
That happens. Scare people. A lot of heart attack deaths for hamsters where they get scared.
Wheel deaths. I feel like the wheel
deaths?
is very dangerous.
I don't think we should
hamster.
Be going down. Now let's get back on track here. Now we're totally off the rails. This has gone too far. All right. So Rays, Jays this weekend. And then I want to get into jinxes, omens, curses, and the Toronto Maple Leafs and Tampa today on Good Hour. But I'm going to start with this. The first game against Tampa Bay, you looked at the standings when they flashed it up there, and the Rays have this incredible record. They beat all the bad teams. I was joking about it. But there were real stakes for this series. Jays could. Okay, so you're going to say no to that because it's unlikely.
It depends on what you mean.
Okay, well,
what do you mean?
It's unlikely, but the Rays could have been 16-0, and the Jays could have been 7-8 in this series.
Yep,
that's real stakes. That is real stakes. That is a massive hole to be climbing out of in April. No, you disagree?
No, I don't disagree that that's like bad and that's not what you want. And I will say that, like, even, you know, the numbers people would agree that what has already happened to the Rays and Blue Jays, like, has impacted the projections for the season-long standings substantially. The Rays and the Blue Jays were both projected to be 89-win teams by Fangraphs at the beginning of the season. Rays got off to that 13-0 start, despite the fact that they were against totally crappy teams. It doesn't matter because the Blue Jays also get to play the crappy teams. Their updated win projection, I didn't check it after the Blue Jays series, but it was 96 wins going into the series. So yeah, no, that's something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not like the season's over.
But of course that's not what I'm saying. We don't need to extrapolate it to that. What I'm saying is there were huge stakes. For the Blue Jays to be back that many games in April would have been tough, and it actually did feel realistic to me because the Blue Jays threw Barrios and Kikuchi out there for the first two games. And Manoa...
And they were the only good pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Manoa can't seem to figure this out unless it's against the Royals so far this season. Don't do that. That's we're going
to
get...
Well, that's the one thing. Like, it's... I'm poring over the numbers. Like, I'm trying to figure it out.
You're poring them over, eh? You're just the accountant.
I'm like, hey, listen, I get numbers. Thanks. I get... Nice. What? Like, yeah.
He's poring over the
numerals,
people. Thank God
digits?
For you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. We are blessed.
Yeah. I can analyze these numbers. I'm a smart guy.
Yeah.
And the thing I keep coming back to is... Well, it's just like all walks. It's just he's walking too many guys because we think of this guy as being pretty wild in the strike zone, but his walk percentage is pretty low. Now he's hit the most batters in the American League.
I don't think it's about him as a control guy because he plunks so many people.
Yeah, but that's like kind of a feature, not a bug, right? Mm-hmm. That's the part of the Alek Manoah package.
I love
it. But he's been his walk rate. Like, remember how bad it was to watch Yusei Kikuchi every 5 days with the lack of control and the number of walks? Alek Manoah is blowing his walk rate out of the water from last season. Like, Alek Manoah is walking everybody. Even in the good start in Kansas City at 5 walks, right? Like, that's entirely the issue. Yeah, you can point to the miles per hour being down a couple of starts in a row, but they were back yesterday. Like, that was fine. Fastball was – he had more than enough velocity to get people out with the fastball, and he's never going to strike a ton of people out, right? The strikeout rate is always among the lowest amongst guys that are as effective as he is. It's just – you can't be letting guys get on base without swinging the bat. Make him swing the bat, and he hasn't. Too many walks.
Yeah. He is a fascinating case study for me right now because you and I, you and I both love sports psychology, right? It's a topic that we've discussed many times, and that's kind of the gist of today. And so I guess we'll get into it with Manoah right away, which is... I find him particularly interesting because I'm watching him post-game yesterday, and you mentioned he's walking everybody. He's not really locating... He's saying to the media that he doesn't really want to change too much, that he felt like most of his pitches were dialed in. And again, this is after he gave up the 7 runs, couldn't get through a game against a really important team, an opportunity to sweep, and with all of those walks still happening for him. Like, control, command very much an issue right now for Alek Manoah. And he's trying to put on a brave face to the media, but it's not the same Alek Manoah we're used to, which is every single thing that has ever happened with him in the Blue Jays uniform essentially has been a party, right? He stands up in front of the media. He holds court. He's wearing his tank top, and he's talking
but
about...
But he's had, like, what, like 3 bad starts?
Exactly. I mean,
but before the playoff game against the Mariners, it was like the guy was a lock to go at least 5, probably 6. Even if he had bouts a start where he didn't look at his best, he would always gut it out. And honestly, I thought that was what we were going to see yesterday after giving up the 3 runs early. Like, he kind of bounced back in a nice way,
but then
fell apart
again. Yeah, he had a nice little bit of a quiet time. My point there is that everyone believes that this guy believes in himself, right? He's the number one dude of, you're not going to shake his confidence with poor outings. He's going to battle. He's going to do all these things. But watching him yesterday, just a little bit of body language stuff, you could tell that the tenor was a little bit different in terms of the way that he was talking, the way that he looked, the way he was carrying himself. And I went, this is going to be fascinating to watch him through this period of time because he does not have the failures and the coming out of the failures to fall back on. And the deeper he goes into this hole, the more it's going to become a bit of a story. And right now, it's not even really one to me. We're going to go, oh yeah, Alek Manoah will figure it out. If you had to do confidence ranking of pitchers that are just going to be fine at the season's end, he's at the very top of the pile. But just because he's had no struggles. He's genuinely the most successful Blue Jays pitcher in team history out of the gate. From a wins loss.
Roy Halladay had to go down to single A.
Alek Manoah, most successful Blue Jay out of the gates, out of anybody. Best start to a Blue Jays career out of any starting pitcher ever. And so, yeah, to see a bit of a roller coaster ride out of the gates, have it be a bumpy flight, I think it, to me, it's just a little bit more interesting to see where this goes from here.
Yeah, because he's never really had struggles at any level. Now, we don't know, because he had a weird year where he didn't play in the minor leagues, right, during COVID, so he was at the weird alternate site, and who knows what. And maybe he struggled there. Maybe he really went through some struggles.
Okay, did you hear his postgame yesterday, though? Did you hear his postgame?
He said, I saw the part about getting beat up. He apparently got beat up. Yes. All 6'6", 285 pounds of Alek Manoah apparently got beat up.
This is my point. It's so unlikely that he gets beat up on the baseball field that a 6'8" massive human has been beat up more times in the outside world. It's more likely that somebody shows up and beats up Alek Manoah and all of that mountain of a man than it is that he gets torched on the baseball diamond. And that's what makes this so interesting.
Did he live like in the Serengeti? Did he get like beat up by like gorillas? Like
he
I don't know.
Like a Mowgli situation. He was living with the wolves, and he was like, "Damn,
I don't know."
Wolves,
I don't know.
Wolves got
was he next door
today.
Neighbors with like the Undertaker? Like I don't know. Like who is the person?
That is... Every morning, well, it's the Big Show. He's coming down the ramp at Alek Manoah. He's like, damn it, not again, Big Show. Anyways,
No, but this is. It is, I know this is such a cliche thing to say, but it is true. Like, not all progress is linear.
Yeah.
And it's not usually linear. It has been for him. Like, look at his first year. You're like, holy cow, what a great start. Out of the gates to put up that type of season. You know, we would expect him to take a bit of a step back in his sophomore year or maybe put up similar results. He was better. Like, he was better. He's top five American League Cy Young Award candidate.
Yeah.
And outperformed a lot of his underlying numbers, too, right? That is part of it. Like, a lot of the advanced stats called for a regression because, like, really, you have to
be
the elite of the elite to have an ERA in the twos.
I was going to say, that's the lamest stuff the nerds do. Where they're like, it's going to be a regression season. You're like, all right, yeah, fine. He's an ERA of two.
Well, why is that lame? It was unrealistic to expect him to replicate what he did a season ago.
Sure.
Because he doesn't throw 99, because he doesn't strike out 10 per 9, right? But he could still have a good season, still can have a good season. But no, this is usually the progression is a starting pitcher gets his feet wet and maybe guys are seeing him for the first time and trying to figure him out. Maybe you have a season where they don't figure you out, but then the adjustments come or you have less stuff or, you know, a rule change happens like the pitch clock. And maybe for a guy that is so like what makes Alek Manoah is so great is not stuff that you can necessarily put your finger on. It's reading bats. It's like, it's that chess match between the pitcher and the batter and maybe not having enough time to think it through, to do those other things that he's done in the last two seasons is impacting the guy. And we just need to see if he can make the adjustment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we've seen enough of him to believe that he's capable of doing it.
Yeah. I would say that if there were stories that if you were going to pick five guys that were going to struggle out of the gate, and you're going to say, yeah, but their numbers are going to be normal at the end of the season. Manoah would be in the five for me, without a doubt, right? Like, it would be Bichette. It would be him, maybe 1-2.
Yeah, except Bo Bichette is, like, having a better start than Vlad, who's having a spectacular start.
I know.
Like, I kind of feel like Bo's start is going under the radar a little bit because it was like, Matt Chapman, American League Player of the Week, and deservedly so. He's been amazing. And it's like, Vlad, spitting on all these borderline pitches, taking a bunch of walks. And it's like, Bo has double the amount of home runs as Vlad and has the most hits in baseball right now and, like, looks every bit the player we saw for the last month and a half of the season that was the best hitter in baseball. And then your mind starts racing, wondering if he can do that for 162 games.
Yeah, I think that might be why that happens with Bo is when he was so hot to close last year that it's become a bit expected. But there's also the you don't want to get too high with it because you know that a low could be around the corner.
Maybe. He's not striking out. That's the thing.
No,
right?
I know, like, dude. He's getting his bat on every single baseball. It is insane.
Vlad had like one strikeout in what, like that first road trip?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Bo only has one more strikeout on the season than Vlad. Like, they're basically neck and neck in strikeouts,
yeah.
And Vlad has way fewer at-bats, right, because he actually takes walks, and Bo doesn't. He's just, he's getting in two strike counts, and he's doing the thing where he's going the other way. Like, everything seems to be to right field, unless it's a breaking ball, which he hammers to left. But no, this guy, I mean, and then you can talk about the defense if you want. But no, if there was a question about what the true value or true offensive ceiling of this guy was at the conclusion of last year, I'm curious to see how long he can keep this up.
Yeah, 100%. He's got 7 strikeouts and 75 plate appearances.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty damn good for a guy that everyone thinks of as a player who can strike out a lot. So, yeah, pretty good for Bo Bichette. I think that's a good take, that he's been underrated to start this season.
Thank you.
Well,
it's a good situation for the Blue Jays. It means that there's other guys offensively that you can talk about. And, I mean, Matt Chapman, especially considering the narrative coming out of spring that he had changed the stride to the toe tap, and, you know, some people scratching their heads about how effective that was going to be, and then looking like the absolute best version of himself, back to the top 5 MVP candidate stuff. And then, it's always going to be about Vlad and whether he can get back to 2021. But, yeah, no, here's this guy that's been the best hitter on one of the best teams in baseball, and it's kind of like third. He's like,
and picking up right where he left off. Yeah, picking up right where he left off.
Bronze medal position as far as narrative stuff.
Well, but okay, but some of that does make sense too, though, just because the park has been such a huge story, right? People returning to the Diamond, returning to the Rogers Center, and having all these new social spaces and viewing experiences. And so that swallowed up narrative discussion for what, 4-5 days essentially, where that was almost the biggest story in town. It was them being on the road. It was home opener. And what happens the first couple of weeks of the season? It's, well, you focus in on the new guys. So you want to see Chris Bassitt. He has a nightmare first start. Kikuchi has a good one. There's a roller coaster ride with Barrios. So I don't really blame it as – I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily that it's underrated. I think that you're right in terms of it's been totally overlooked. But now as we actually start to get into the season, if he does continue this thing, it's not going to just become a story here. It's going to become one of the biggest stories in all baseball.
Yeah, well, I mean – This is the conversation I keep trying to drum up in the off season, is making people pit Vlad and Bo against each other, right? Like, and making people
you want
take
that
the pick.
Yeah, okay.
I really like it because I think it's an interesting thought experiment, right? Because in all likelihood,
I wish other people could see Ennis's face when he does. He's like, and I want to pit them against each other, and he's got this smirk on his face. He's all happy about it. He's like, okay, and here I go to outline my case about making you hate one of your favorite baseball players. Here I go.
You don't hate one.
Oh, well, you kind of just said pit against each other. When I think pit against, I don't think, well, you can like them both. That's not really pit against.
Do you think the Blue Jays are going to sign both guys to long-term deals?
Can I?
Like, do you think both guys are going to be Blue Jays once they reach free agency?
So here's what I have, how I feel shockingly about it right now. I think Vladdy is almost a lock to re-sign with the Blue Jays. I just don't see that not happening. And
you believe that he said he wants to be a Blue Jay forever?
Yeah, I whatever athletes say, I believe. You know me. That's always what I do. If you say it, I believe it. That's how I live my life. No, I just think that he fits here. It makes sense for him here, that they'll pay him. They understand who he is and what he means to the country and what he could mean to the baseball team. And, yeah, just how the bat is going to play for a very long time, how he'll age probably very well. Man, the plays that he made defensively over the weekend, right, at first base, that was probably the biggest pop out of anything from the crowd and from Twitter. Like, people love Vladdy here. They just love him. It's just a different kind of love because we've known him since he was essentially a 15-year-old or whatever when the Blue Jays signed him. So to me, it's just a harder thing to believe that he walks or that it becomes acrimonious or that the organization doesn't shell out the dough for him. He's just a more likely guy for me that they shell out the money to.
Hope. Factually, they've shelled out the money for Bo, right?
Yes, they have.
And they've figured out the 1-year deals for Vlad, avoiding arbitration. But like, factually, they decided, hey, we better pay Bo a little bit more than it would cost to go to arbitration because we want to make nice with this guy. He's the only guy that they've come to a common ground on a contractual agreement for multiple years.
And Ben, that's why where I'm going with this is I'm actually more optimistic than ever that there is a reality where both guys do sign with this team. And that this is the Vladdy and Bo team, and then they just figure out everything else around the two of them. So obviously I coined the term Minoans. I love Alec Minot. He's my favorite Blue Jay. But if you were going to tell me, hey, what's the smarter investment to be making, Bobichet, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., or the starting pitcher, it's a no-brainer, right? So obviously.
It always was.
Yeah, of course it always was. But I'm just saying that to me, there is a pathway forward with this. If there was a path for them to re-sign Manoah and re-sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr., then I have to believe that them coming to the table and figuring something out with Bo, them having a bunch of success over these next couple of years, Rogers making a ton of money off of the Blue Jays and having them be successful and make some deep playoff runs, that there actually might be a path forward for both. Anyways, I don't know why we're having this conversation in April. You really want to pit people against each other, Bo and Vlad and their potential futures as they just start the year extremely hot and everyone's really happy. You're talking about potentially.
Choose one. Pick one.
I was like, why? Why are we doing this? Anyway, okay, so the other two guys. Big meaningful takeaways from the weekend against the Rays. This seems redundant for me, but just the defense, the way that it shows up with this team night in, night out right now is very encouraging to me in terms of what matters and what could come up big come playoff time. And I know you love everybody likes defense. I like how people act like no one likes it just because people wanted to see offense too. But what are you reading into the Kikuchi starts and the Barrios one? Do those matter to you really?
Kikuchi all season long matters to me.
Yeah, that one's huge. Man,
it's even the times that he hasn't been as great as he obviously was against the Rays. Because it's just, like, honestly, he's a simple guy to figure out. Because mm-hmm. the strikeout rate has always been there. Even last year, he struck people out in the rotation, in the bullpen. Guy can strike people out. He throws 97 from the left side. All it is walks. And he's done that in each and every start this season. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, that's all that matters with him. Is keeping the ball in the zone. And, yeah, okay, he's going to have some starts where, I guess, you know, you can't miss every single bat, and when it comes in at 97, it can go out at 115. I get that. But, no, all I care when it comes to Kikuchi is limiting the walks, which he's done incredibly well, and it's hard not to think about the pitch clock and that guy just being taken out of his brain and not having enough time to think about
buddy, if that's actually what it was, then that's one of the greatest takes I've ever had in my entire existence.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be exactly that, because I think he's also said it explicitly. He's like, I don't know, I just get the ball and now I throw it. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, this was one of the slowest workers on the team, and now he has to be as fast as everybody else. I'm super encouraged by what I've seen from Yusei Kikuchi. Barrios, obviously, less so.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, the idea, the path back to a guy that was an all-star, a guy that, you know, had potential Cy Young potential when the Blue Jays traded for him and then signed him to a seven-year extension.
Yep.
Yeah, it seems unlikely we're going to get back to that spot. But like, okay, I tweeted before his last start that this guy has two absolutely abysmal starts, and then he'll throw a good one at you. Like, he is still capable of throwing 200-ish innings and having as many quality starts as Kevin Gausman, which he did last season.
Okay, so this is where
he's a fifth starter. Like, he's the fifth starter.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this is where I was going with this, though. It's obviously, it's April. I understand. However, this is not an April take. Who do you think has the higher upside, Kikuchi or Barrios? Because to me, it's Kikuchi 100%, right?
There's no debate about it.
That's
Kikuchi
what I'm saying.
Kikuchi strikes people out. Dude,
and when he was throwing 97 and just making Rays batters look foolish, I went, that was a very different, and I know Barrios had, what, six strikeouts and five innings, I want to say, in his start, so he was solid, but the stuff that Kikuchi has, when he's rolling like that, I have a measurable amount of confidence in it. I'm watching it and going, that is really, really good. This is very, very nasty. And I kind of do feel like, yeah, if you could pick one of those two guys to figure it out, obviously from a long-term standpoint, it would be Barrios because he's got 7 years on his deal. But for this season, I think the answer is 100% Kikuchi. Like, you could get one of these two guys figured out, they're their best version of themselves, Kikuchi.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go totally off the rails and do an April take, you could do playoff rotation today.
No, okay.
Gausman, game one. Kikuchi, game two.
I thought I set it up a way that worked in April. I thought I set it up a way that worked in April, and you took it into hyperdrive and went completely. No, yeah. Kikuchi, game two. Yeah, that's true. Gausman won, Kikuchi two. That is the.
And then Bassett three, honestly.
No, yeah, shut up. Yeah.
But know what? Like, you try and get four or five out of him in game four. And then it's a bullpen game. Yeah, no, I've been the biggest question about this rotation was obviously the two guys at the back end of it, and the results haven't been perfect for either guy.
No,
obviously to start the year, but again, if there's one thing, like, it's a very very rare player that you can just point to, like, one area statistical category where it's like this is it. This is the total indication. This is the total package for Kikuchi it's walks, and he's limited those, so naturally he's going to be good because he strikes people out.
I'm just trying to think about guys who would have had the redemption arc in this city, the level of what Kikuchi would have if he actually finishes this season as... Okay, not that, because that's way too high, right, of expectation for him to be a... like killing the Rays guy?
Well, I mean, he was an all-star. When they signed him, he was an all-star,
but then he also fell off. Like, he was kind of one of those fake all-stars where he got...
Santiago Espinal?
Yeah, kind of. He was exactly. He was one of those kind of fake all-stars, and then his second half of the season, he ended up with an ERA, I'm pretty sure close to five, right? It was like a 4.90.
Oh, it was well over five. No,
it, was no, it wasn't. It was, I think it was 4.97 or something like that when he finished the season. I'm guessing. Jobo, stats guy, get on it. Find out Yusei Kikuchi... statistics when he was an all-star. What his ERA was at the all-star break, and then what his ERA was at the end of the season. Either way, I think we all knew when the Jays were getting him that he wasn't... Yeah, when people were like, he's an all-star, it wasn't like they were getting Juan Soto. You know, it wasn't, oh my God, look, they're getting one of the best pitchers, or they're one of the best players in baseball. But yeah, I do have this weird confidence in him, and I am hoping for this narrative arc that happens where, yeah, he just... He's not just a comeback guy. He's the comeback guy in the city. And that when anybody points to struggles, they go, it could be like Kikuchi. You think it's done, but you, but he could end up being the star.
That's the ultimate, is that his name becomes synonymous with the guy who's like bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, he could be that. I could not think of anybody that was as low as he has been. Because, and you can't count guys coming in and being rookies or whatever, right? Like, guys coming in, like, and struggling out of the gate at the very beginning of their careers. I'm talking about big signings, guys who got... He came here to essentially replace Robbie Ray, and they said, we're going to fix him and turn him into Robbie Ray 2.0. And then he was a nightmare. People couldn't stand him. He looked like a complete write-off, and now he started this season, and yeah, he's been one of their better starters. Anyways, I've really liked it. All right, this brings me to this question. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll get into Leafs Lightning and some takes off in. But do you believe in omens? Because the Blue Jays beating the Rays, the start of Toronto beating Tampa in a series, do you believe in omens? Omens for Ennis.
I do believe in, like, sports carryover momentum, like city sports momentum.
I believe in that too, but I think that's more of an accountability thing, or you want to step up kind of thing. No? Like, in the city,
okay,
you want to be seen?
Like, the one team sees the success of the other team. It's like, we've got a standard now.
If it's pervasive throughout the city, like, I think that cities can have a moment. It doesn't last forever, but, yeah, I think that if you're winning in Boston and there's other winning happening, that there's, like, this added confidence that they probably get that you go, yeah, we're the city of champions or whatever.
Yeah, I believe in that stuff. I mean, we've seen it so many times. Usually, you know, over the last 20 years, it's been Boston.
But omens, like, if you saw a crow die in the sky today, like, it just plummeted, it hit the windshield of your car. A crow hits the windshield of your car. Are you like, this could be a bad day happening here, omen? Or if a bird poos on you, people think that's a good omen. Like, two bird-related omens in honor of the Blue Jays. How do you feel about omens?
Those aren't my omens, but yeah, I don't know if this is the same thing, but like if I'm a clumsy dude, like in the morning, if I like pour coffee all over myself, which is common.
This is an omen. I think these are omens. Yeah. No, I think these are omens. These are signs. You're trying to interpret the signs of the universe and make sense of them to the, how they fit into your life.
Yeah, there's things that we can't perceive, okay? There are energies that we can't put our fingers on, okay?
And one of those energies right now is Toronto beating Tampa in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, is the team that is heavily favored against the Rays or against the Lightning? And yeah, actually, apparently, percentage wise, only slightly more favorites than they were a season ago. But yeah,
we'll get into that. Just stick to omens. Points. Well, just stick to omens. Do you believe in omens? Just stick to omens. Don't get Leafs. Leafs are going to be on the other side of break, and we're going to talk about narrative versus, logical discourse. But what about omens? What is an omen to you that throws you off for the day? Spilling coffee on your shirt, I guess? Big clumsy hands, you're like, this is a sign of a bad day.
Yeah. Also, my kid, my five-year-old being in a horrible mood and, like, yelling at me.
That's
is
not really
a,
an
is
omen.
Bad omen. So, yeah, I believe in omens, okay? I believe in it. Those things are a little more controllable, though, than, like, the crows falling out of the sky.
That's what I'm saying. I think your grumpy kid isn't really... That's not an omen. That's just a fact. That's in front of you.
It's an omen for the rest of his life that he's going to be a temperamental human being.
Yeah. That's just a
it's
situation.
An indicator. Is that the same thing as an omen?
No.
A sign.
I got to Google omen. Now I'm all confused. Now I'm like, what is an omen exactly? Now I've got that. What is that called? Damn it. What, Jobo, you got this?
An omen definition, an event regarded as portent of good or evil.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So good or evil, actually.
Good or evil.
Good or evil. So yeah, this is a whole different level of stakes. If the Leafs win, or if the Blue Jays won, and it is an omen, it is a sign that Toronto is good and Tampa is bad, which I agree with. Like, if you were going to say which of these places represents evil, wouldn't be us. It would be them.
No, it's, I mean, pretty
clearly 100%
Florida.
Them. Yeah,
is
duh.
The, like, it's the heart of, it's like the, yeah, it's where all the evil is congregated.
I would
Florida.
Say it's the evil capital of North America. It's gotta be. There's a lot of evil concentrate there. It's
like the Minions movie, like they have like the evil villain get together, they congregate.
Yeah.
And
I
it
like
is
Gru.
Literally in Florida, I believe. I think it's in Orlando.
Yeah.
So but yeah, Tampa, way, close if, enough.
Buddy, if you were going to have a villain retreat, you would have it in Florida. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt. There's the only like side
Minnesota?
I was actually like, going to say chance. That I feel like there would Florida. Be some kind of side contender like Montana, because there'd be like a ranch there that some evil villain would have, and they would go, come out to my ranch on Montana. But Florida would be number one. Florida is number one. So yeah, I believe in omens, and I think that the Jays beating the Rays was here's what I'll say. It's not a bad omen.
No.
It's not a bad omen.
Unless you use up all your wins against Tampa.
No, that's not a thing.
Franchises.
You think you're like Trump, where it's like you have a life battery or
battery.
Whatever. You use up the battery. You use up all the wins. Yeah, that's your theory, except for applied to sports. So yeah, you used them up, but you get more next year, but it's not for this. No. That one, if we're going to have omen talk, Ben, please be serious about it. Please take omen talk seriously. Don't say stupid
Villain
things.
Villain
Con
was in Orlando, by the way.
Villain Con
Villain
was
Con. Yeah, from Despicable
see,
Me.
I knew it.
Oh, Villain Con.
So
that's
all the
from,
villains went to Orlando.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying. So here we go. Hey, that's a good omen. Good versus evil. Good can triumph. All right, let's talk about Leafs Lightning and, logic versus the supernatural next. Good hour.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Good hour continues. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave 5 stars. And then, there's a podcast-only portion to the show now. So if you are listening on radio or you're live streaming, you can only get it on, Sportsnet's website. But easiest if you just follow, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. And then we'll take some stuff into there from the weekend. Mostly some NBA playoff touch-ups. Mm-hmm. Some funny stuff that you
Light
guys...
Light the beam.
Yeah. I was really torn in that game, actually. I'll talk about that later. But yeah, I was very, the whole game going back and forth of who I wanted to win it. And I love the Kangs. But I was just,
Fox.
I find myself always cheering for the highest outcome in sports sometimes. So what is a greater Toronto tradition? First sun, first meaningful weekend of sun and coming out of it with a sunburn, or being completely paralyzed and terrified of any positivity about the Toronto Maple Leafs playoff chances, Benny?
Yeah, no, they're one and the same. Normally, we don't get the sun, but the Leafs thing is the thing that you usually set your watch to. Mm-hmm. It was nice that we got the little respite of weird July weather that we're not going to get now for another 2 weeks. It's going to be a high of 6 tomorrow. But no, it's actually that's the take. It's perfect Toronto Maple Leafs return to the playoffs weather tomorrow. It's going to be the coldest
Wait,
day.
Wait, are you saying this is a bad omen?
Week. I'm just saying that you, Leaf fans need to be in that spot.
The sun was shining when there were no Leaf games, and then the Leafs returned, and then the, what's that called, pathetic fallacy was just the worst weather returns. That's not good. That's a bad
But the
omen.
Leafs can, the Leafs can make it sunny
Liz.
Again.
I think that this could be bad. This is a one-in-one situation. We're going to have to find the third omen that's a good omen.
Yeah, that the sun shines on the Blue Jays, but not on the Toronto Maple Leafs. I would say that if you're an optimist, you would say that the Leafs can bring the sun back. They can bring the good weather back by...
They control the weather?
The first time. Yeah, sort of, maybe.
All right.
With their good vibes.
All right. That didn't feel
good. I'm trying, man.
That was thumbs down around the studio. All the fellas in the studio were like, just gave you the... What's the emperor in... What's the evil emperor's name? Joaquin Phoenix's character in...
I forget.
Yeah, no one remembers? Come on. I'm struggling today. I got too much sun. I went out in the sun yesterday for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and I just have sunburns. It's just, that's the way it is. It's a little...
Yeah, you shouldn't be permitted to go out in the sun.
Oh, the easing of the back in is a very, very tough time period for, I think, a lot of Canadians, but especially those of us with very, very fair complexion, light skin, blue eyes. It's a really tough
time. Commodus?
That's yeah, that's it. Yes, yes, yes. There we go. It's Commodus, but yeah.
Oh, sorry, my bad, yeah.
I know, but she's 20. You know, it's just he's trying to read. He just learned.
Almost 23?
He just learned. He literally just learned how to read. All right, so I'm really, this year almost more than ever, I find the Leafs, Jinxy, all these conversations to be the most fascinating of them all. Because last year when they played Tampa, it was very much, hey, there's a ton of pressure on this team. It was very much about the matchup. There was a little bit about Tampa. I think maybe some people thought there was some optimism, but Toronto played them really well. And if you even look at the statistics of games 6 and 7, Toronto outchanced them 5-on-5. Tampa really did a great job of capitalizing on specialty teams. Like, they did a great job on the power play. And that's basically the way that they're going to win this series. If you just look at every single number going into this sucker, Toronto's looked good against them in the regular season. Toronto looks more balanced. They look deeper. They have a goaltender who's put up terrific stats. They're deep on the blue line. They've got 13 forwards who can play. We're having genuine conversations about who's going to get in here. It feels like their stars are entering their primes. In Matthews, completely normalized down the stretch. Marner has been brilliant all year. Nylander's coming off of a 40-goal season. They've added a Conn Smythe winner. And for Tampa Bay, it's like, go look at their lineup. And it is a bunch of guys on the blue line with Hedman and Sergachev that you've never really heard of before. And they're not nearly
their
as
prize acquisition, like, hurt. Just destroyed his knee.
Yep, hurt. Their fourth line that gave Toronto so much trouble last year has been horrific this season. A lot of production fall off for Perry, for Maroon. They just look slower. Luke Shen is coming off, fresh off of just eviscerating Patrick Maroon and destroying any idea that he is going to be a problem for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And so there's optimism from a logical standpoint right now, right? Is people talking about this series, it is a lot of, when I've discussed it, if Toronto loses this, this is not a... This is actually, it's in their heads. This is actually, oh, okay, something is fatally flawed here with this group, because that's going to be now, I don't really, the Columbus one is weird because it technically wasn't a playoff series. It was a play into the playoff series.
I feel like they've gone back and changed that now, because now the Leafs and the Bruins own the longest streak of making the playoffs, yeah, because they've like retroactively made that a playoff series.
I don't know what the hell. Yeah, they just kind of seem to have thrown it in, even though it technically wasn't, but whatever. I would say that there's only really been three horrifically, there's two really bad playoff losses, right? It's Columbus and it's Montreal.
But even Columbus, so what, the Leafs?
They were horrible
and
that
Columbus
year.
Columbus were tied on points when the Rangers, I mean, we did that trade deadline show.
The Leafs were crap.
Like, oh, you got to get whatever you can for Tyson Barrie.
It was David Ayers' year. It was the David Ayers' year. They were bad.
That
they were not a good team.
Awful.
Yes,
awful,
but I'm just saying, like, that's the one where they should have, they were favored in that series. They were favored in the series against Montreal. I can't remember if they were slight favorites last year. I feel like they probably were, but it was like a very small one, and everyone would have thought, like, all right, this is what it is. It's going to go to a game seven. It's going to be a coin toss. That is not this year. All I've done is outline that this season, the Leafs should be favored for basically every logical reason outside of Vasilevsky is clearly one of the greatest goaltenders on earth. But when you discuss this, I'm finding that a lot of people have basically taken this as, interpreted as, if you're discussing positive momentum about the Leafs or how the Leafs look good, that this is something that's always happened, as though this fan base has always planned the parade, which is like a complete fallacy. No one here has ever really been positive about the hockey team. Like, there was a small portion of time when they drafted all the guys at the beginning of this run where people really thought, okay, this could happen. They could win Stanley Cups. They could win this. They could get this core group. John Tavares is signed here. Something is actually happening. This is not an overly optimistic fan base that gets way ahead of their skis and starts talking trash and starts thinking that they're going to be amazing. It's very cautious. It's very, very, very cautious a lot of the times. And for this series, for people to be going, yeah, Toronto should be the favorites, I've found it to be shocking, the degree of discourse of people being like, don't mention this. This is cursey. This is jinxy. This is insane. I don't really know what to make of it. This has actually been a bit different than in years past, even for the jinx narrative, which is usually pretty high here.
Yeah, this is, and I heard you on with James Myrtle the other day talking about this would be the second biggest disappointment outside of the Montreal, which like,
it would be.
And I agree. I mean, the difference, of course, being that in the Montreal series, they got a Carey Price who ended up leading a pretty crappy Montreal team all the way to the Stanley Cup
but
final.
I don't know why people are associating it would be a disappointing loss with it could not happen. You know, like, I don't know where that synapse is firing for people, where you go, the Leafs should be favored, and then you go, huh, the way to go. No, you saying that Tampa has no shot? What? No, that's not the conversation at all. It's that one team is clearly better than the other and should win. The Leafs should win this.
There's no dissenting opinion.
Like, there shouldn't
be. You can't really have one. Like,
no.
It's a 13-point gap during the regular season. I mean, the only argument, and I know you just like kind of threw it in there as like a bucket of things that might go wrong,
is that
they have a Hall of Fame goaltender.
No, not a Hall of Famer, potentially a Mount Rushmore goaltender.
Yeah, but yeah, a guy that even by the advanced numbers is having, and Ilya Samsonov had a career year, and he was great at high danger. Save percentage, but yeah, even you go deeper into the advanced numbers, like goals saved above average, and Vasilevskiy had him. I mean, it's the most important thing in hockey. But outside of that, there's nobody who's watched all 82 games of both teams, and especially the way they played after the deadline, where the Lightning were below 500, and thinks that this should be, you know, these two teams should be viewed on level footing headed into the series. It's just not, there's no logical way to view it that way.
Yeah, and this is where the question of jinxes or trauma comes into play, and whether there's actually, because you just said you believe in city sports championship mentality. And so this is where I really hope that this week, because we were supposed to have Ryan Callahan, and you're actually the backup guest. Sorry to inform you of this,
thanks,
but Ryan Callahan, I know he canceled last minute because he found out he was doing the Oilers series. Poof. Yeah.
Are the Oilers playing at 10 this morning?
Yeah, I know. It's really a tough look for me. All around. It's all around. I prepared for the entire interview. But I know athletes have an incredible amount of self-belief, right? And of course, because they've made it to professional ranks. They make millions of dollars playing sports. They have accomplished the dreams of millions, right? The absolute fantasy. The idea that you become a professional athlete is absurd. Think about as you're watching your kid play his Timbit hockey right now that you're seeing, right? Your oldest boy has started to play it. Imagine the idea that that little creature that is skating around out there one day is making a $10 million contract like Austin Matthews is, scoring 50. Like, it's absurd. It's an absurd idea. So, of course, you have an immeasurable amount of confidence. Of course, you think that you're the center of the story. And, of course, you would think going into a playoff series that your mentality would be strong and that there would be a lot of fortitude with this. But that is what is extra interesting about this series with the Leafs this year, is that if this is basically you removed any of the teams and you just put up the statistics and you just put up the players and the acquisitions and all of that different stuff, and you removed it and you put up like, hey, what are all the favorites in the first round? Like, who are you definitively going to pick? Boston would get definitively picked over the Florida Panthers. And then it would probably be this 1 second. Like, go look at it. Go look at the disparity between the teams from a number standpoint, from a roster standpoint, from an age standpoint, all of it. And tell me which of the teams, from a logical standpoint, have a better shot at winning than the Leafs. And now
it's hard to apply logic, right, is your point, that there are some people that are having trouble with the logic because
so much of what's happened over
the last half decade has been illogical. I would say the most illogical thing, despite the fact that, there were only significant favorites in the Montreal series, is six straight winner-take-all games lost, right? Like, even if, like, those are just hockey games, right?
Yeah.
We watch enough hockey games between two teams on an ice surface in 60 minutes with a rubber disc to understand that sometimes, like, the worst team wins a 60-minute hockey game, that you would flip a coin, and a weighted coin, I get it, but six straight times and land up on tails all six times. To me, that is the biggest indicator that, like, logic can't be applied to this team. And it's happened in different ways.
See, this is where, though, I actually feel stronger about this case, is that the Leafs lost to Montreal, who is the clearly inferior team. But Montreal did get hot at the right time, and you did mention the Carey Price thing. Like, Montreal went through and made a Stanley Cup final that year. Mm-hmm. It's outrageous to think about, because considering the next year they turned around and they were one of the league's worst teams, and everyone went, wow, this is kind of stupid sometimes how this sport works and how the parity goes and whatever. But ultimately, sure, goaltending can put you deep in the playoffs. The team can get hot at the right time. Those things can happen. That is logical as well. But if you look back on all the Leafs series, they were not the favorites. They were not supposed to be favored year one against the Washington Capitals. They were not supposed to be the favorites against the Bruins two of the times. They were kind of not the favorites, at least against Tampa Bay, where at least last year it was a coin toss series where you went, hey, these guys are the most experienced group. This is a really, really tough out. They have been sort of conserving themselves, but they're still pretty deep. They're still pretty dangerous. They know how to get this done. There's not really any signs of decline with a lot of their players. They figured out some ways to manipulate and to get into here. This is a different story, and people feel like it's the exact same one. And the more I look at it, I go, all right, unless the unquantifiable just dominates this series, then it becomes weirdly the quantifiable, right? Where you go, no, these guys kind of are chokers and you have to change something. There's something about this group that is flawed. I don't think Tampa can just outplay them to a degree where people come away from this and go, wow, Tampa's actually incredible. And that is just not a deserved loss for the Leafs. Like a coin toss loss to me in this series is actually that bad outcome. Not saying Tampa doesn't have a chance, for God's sakes. I'm saying that the Toronto Maple Leafs are absolutely the superior team based on every single piece of evidence that you can bring from this 82-game regular season against this Tampa Bay Lightning team that looks, yeah, flawed in many ways this time around.
Yeah, and again, there's no way you can view what's happened here through 82 games and have a different perspective. I mean, to me, the only scenario where it plays out and you're like, well, okay, yeah, there is that, and also, oh yeah, that sport is totally reliant upon that one position. It's the Vasilevsky thing, but it's also the Samsonov thing, right? Who got into some playoff games with the Washington Capitals, wasn't necessarily great. And, I mean, your backup is a guy who had a great season in the AHL and showed pretty well in his limited time in the NHL, but could you see a scenario where
of course they
those
get
guys absolutely melt down and cost you an entire series? I mean, that's it. And then what do you do, right? Then you do all the things correctly. You even hit on 50% of the risky goaltending proposition during the course of a regular season, but goaltending is voodoo, and there was such a little playoff resume that it came back to bite you in the postseason with that dude, but you did everything else outside of the one position. I mean, that would be the nightmare scenario as far as the discourse, because what else can you do other than that one position?
Well, I almost, in some ways, yeah, it would be a nightmare for the discourse with Kyle Dubas, and it would be very strange because, again, Samsonov is an RFA this year. They completely whiffed on Matt Murray, and so it would get really difficult to project out what would happen in net, like how you how you change anything there moving forward. But no, I think from a fan base standpoint, there's really no outcome at this point where they lose and people go, hey, this is fine, or at least it shouldn't be this way. Either way, just to me, there is a new level of sensitivity with the fan base that is really starting to show up. I think the scars of these past years, everyone's always joked about it with the Leafs, but I've felt it a little bit different. That's just my, again, anecdotal evidence. But that is the way that, yeah, I've been looking at it lately, is people are far more stressed out about this series than ever before. And that, yeah, it's hard to imagine a lot of fan bases looking around and seeing their team match up with a pretty clearly inferior opponent in any sport and fretting it to this degree where it's this much of the illogical that gets strapped onto it.
This really does feel like it, though, right? And we keep saying that this is it. But, like, just factually, the general manager's contract expires at the end of the season. And, I mean, it's one thing to not fire a guy. It's quite another to, like, tack on an extension to a guy's contract if you go out in the first round and then you get a new general manager.
If they go out in the first round,
hey, well, let's keep this thing rolling for another year.
It could fairly, like, I think Dubas has done his best job as general manager this year. And he's had, again, the Matt Murray thing was definitely an absolute huge whiff, but that's what happens in the sport. There are whiffs. There hasn't been one that has completely cracked them or killed them. And Samsonov, the lottery ticket worked out, and excellent trade deadline. A lot of the pieces.
You're happy
fit
with the 50% hit rate on the risky goaltending proposition.
Yeah, kind of. Except for the only thing is the one guy cost $4.5 million, and they got off of a guy that made a ton of money, and then they moved on to him. But either way, I guess my point is that he has done a lot this year that you would look at and go, boy, you really would want him as your general manager moving forward, especially given what the potential outcomes are here. But yeah, at this point, if you lose again a seventh straight season and he doesn't have a contract, the idea that you would tender him a new one, it does get into the silly land. All right, Ben Ennis, thanks so much for your time. We got to run. It is time for Best Bets, brought to you by Betano Sportsbook, the 2022 Global Sports Betting Operator of the Year, the place where I made all my wagers this weekend, the place where I made some decent little bit of coin this weekend. It was all right. I can't remember what my Friday bet was, but Tonight, I'm going to throw in two quick. I like the Jays tonight because Gausman's on the bump and it's minus 111. And I'm also going to be looking at some Gausman props. But I'm also going to go with the Golden State Warriors on the money line. It's a very, very short line. There's tons of options on all this stuff too, by the way. Like just an insane amount of options. Blue Jays game right now, 336 different things you can bet on Betano. Early payouts, if the team goes up 5 runs. So, yeah, I like the Jays. I like the Warriors. I just have a really hard time believing that the Kings are going to take 2 straight from the defending champs. That's just it. This is purely a, can I close my eyes and picture them lighting the beam twice? No. That was Best Bets brought to you by Betano Sportsbook. The game starts now. Go over to the podcast portion. Welcome to the podcast only portion of the show. I just yelled at Austin.
We're back.
this is how we start every single day. Is hey, it's a podcast only, and then I was
just eviscerate someone in close proximity.
Telling Austin not what to do. It's like that's the way she goes every single time. Goodness. Okay, so this weekend, obviously watched a ton of the Blue Jays, and that was pretty much my highlight. But it was nice not having Leafs. And can I give you guys a trust tree take?
Yes.
Like a full just
ready for it.
I really hate how the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs are right at the same time. It just breaks my heart.
Yeah.
It does.
Gotta pick what you're watching.
I wish the buffer was so that the first round matched up with the second round and not the two head to head first rounds.
That's true.
Because I'm just sitting there and I'm watching a copious amount of NBA playoff basketball and it's like all in my head is like Sarah McLachlan, like, I will remember you.
Well, and starting tonight, now like, all of a sudden hockey hits. And
this is when, will you remember me? This is all I'm going to get. It's like, sometimes I'll see maybe a quarter. Like, that's it. Because hockey's going to come, and it's going to dominate so much of what I have to do. And there's going to be Leafs.
Eight
Leafs
games every night between hockey and basketball.
I wish it was, because the first round of Stanley Cup playoffs is also so brilliant. Like, I look at these matchups, and I'm like, hell yes.
Yes.
You don't think I want Oilers Kings every single time?
Oh, yeah.
Tonight?
Oh,
Oilers Kings? Oh, yes. And having the two late games across from each other isn't the worst. That's actually the kind of the sweet zone.
Right.
It's that it's really hard to grind through sports all day and be flipping back and forth with both of them and add Blue Jays to the plate and actually feel like you're really watching stuff and pulling stuff from it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like my takes from these games, the basketball games that I got to watch over this weekend, are concrete.
Yeah, they're strong.
Like, I've watched these games.
Yeah, yeah.
I know what's going on. Now we're getting into territory where I'll have seen bits and pieces, have to watch some highlights. Maybe I saw the first quarter and then I had to tune out for 2 quarters and I came back for the final 5 minutes and I'm one of those fans. It's just, it changes. The game changes so heavily.
I have a feeling you won't be watching too much more of Nuggets T-Wolves
going
forward.
I actually watched zero Nuggets T-Wolves. I watched Succession.
Yeah, there you go. I don't think there's much of a point to watch that
series. And the T-Wolves, I was kind of monitoring the score just to make sure, and they went on an early run and it was kind of a close game early on, and I went, nah, I'm going to stick with the Roy family. I'm going to stick with the Roy family.
Only got interesting the power at the end.
Exactly. It was far more interesting to me. There's truly, I realized it would take a real heavyweight matchup for me to not watch Succession right on target, right on time. Especially since I made fun of everybody who got
now
spoiled.
Now you're pretty committed to watching in real time.
If I don't watch it and then someone spoils an episode,
you're
going to
be sour.
Tough look. No, I won't be sour. I'll just have to eat it. That's my point. I'll have to hide it.
Right, because your stance was the other side. If you don't watch it live.
I'm saying that you should all be watching Succession. If you are a Succession fan, if you are this pot committed and you are watching the show at this point into the final season of one of the best television shows ever, the premier HBO show, you should be watching it live and carving out the time. I'm sorry.
I think that's right.
One hour on a weekend.
I don't think anybody on a Sunday at 9 o'clock is so busy that they can't figure out somewhere to get that in.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, like Logan Roy could have gotten that in. Like he watched the news at night. That's what he was always found
like
time
Sudoku
to watch.
Sudoku guy too.
That was a big reveal. Big reveal. big reveal. See, you just spoiled it. Didn't even give a spoiler.
Sorry, podcast listeners.
Simon says that
we only spoil things.
Oh, okay. All right. Actually, this is a good way to start things off. Is TV question? Okay. So before we get into some of the other sportsy things, I don't really watch the shows that Simon watches because I'm a man who is in his mid-30s, and for whatever reason Simon is like always comes in here and wants to talk about what's your show, Love Island. So I assume you watch Love is Blind.
You are damn right.
Yeah, I knew it. Does anybody else watch it?
Nope.
No. Okay.
I saw what happened last night.
10 out of 10.
Nice. that's some real. Hey, everybody gets to puff their chest out a little bit.
It's a good season.
I only watch Sons of Anarchy.
It's a good season.
It's like none of us have girlfriends. Sick. All of us single as hell, dog.
I don't watch it, but she also doesn't text me back. Yeah, so
all of us just out here, no girls, hanging out with us, making us watch shows.
Bros.
So cool, so sick. Sports alone, nice. Except for Austin, who does have a girl. But so it's like. I don't know. What's she making you watch?
We watched The Secret Life of Big Cats this weekend. It was a fantastic documentary.
Yeah. That sounds pretty sweet. Yeah, that's nice. That is nice. Austin's a stats, like, he's an info guy. So he wants, you know, he wants his infotainment.
Docuseries.
Right? Like, he wants, he really
he needs his documentaries.
Yeah, he does. Dude, he is, I'm telling you, the amount, if you could, like, crack him open and pour out all the information in a, you
would get so many random facts.
There'd be
and
so
stats.
Much in there to sift through. Yeah. You'd spend lifetimes trying to get through all that's in there. Okay, so what happened with Love is Blind then? Because all I saw was that people were freaking out.
People were having a meltdown. Yeah, so there was a Love is Blind like live event. It was supposed to be the reunion that they were going to stream live. Yeah, it's huge. It's probably Netflix's like big, I don't know, like originally produced show these days. I think so.
Really?
Especially because it's like, it's their...
What's Love Island on?
Love Island, oh man, I mean, there's Love Island UK, there's Love Island US.
Don't
I think they're coming out with a Love Island All-Stars soon, so yeah, there's a lot of
All-Star games.
There's a lot of options.
I can't wait for Simon to genuinely not do the show one day, because he's going to be like, I have to go to a Love Island party and I'm going to be up too late to join the show. Anyway, so
Love is Blind.
Love is Blind.
So yeah, they had a live event yesterday. They were supposed to have a live event, and due to some sort of technical difficulty, it was just delayed and delayed and delayed. So all of a sudden, you know, there's the sign on the Netflix thing that said, like, you know, this is unavailable right now, please check in on another show or whatever. Ouch. And then that went into 15 minutes, and then that went to a half hour, and then it got to an hour, and ultimately it got delayed so much that it was going head to head against Succession. Oh. And then they just didn't do it live.
Actually is the right play. I like that play where they just decided to go, you know what? We're going to take a knee here and let you guys watch Succession.
We're just going to give up.
Okay, so I assume Love is Blind is just you can't see the person that you try to date.
Correct. So you start off in pods and this is where you can't see each other, and you talk, and then you have to propose to someone sight unseen, and then...
What do you mean propose?
You say, will you marry me? Okay. And then there's the big reveal of you see each other... And then you go out into the real world, and then it ends on the
This makes me sick.
Weddings.
That honestly made me feel sick. That's really good.
Yeah,
is
it's really
freak
good.
Shows in a box getting married without ever seeing each other. Cool. Yeah. Cool.
You'll be surprised Lunacy. That a lot of the relationships don't actually last.
I am shocked.
Oh, because you're not coming.
I am truly
shocked. I'm glad
you were
sitting down for that.
I do love, though, that they take these freak shows and they make them actually get married.
Oh, yeah.
They go, like, once you see, you gotta do it.
Well, and so the big
thing
is,
you gotta go get legally married. Go through all of this process to be on a television.
Open your pockets, bud.
I'm telling you right now. Like, I'm not... I know that this would get me tons of promo to be on the show. It's a huge show, right? If I was able to say, hey, I could be on the show and I could showcase my personality on this, get millions of people, there's no way I would do this. 0% chance I would do this.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Like, no way.
I'm not even considering it. I'm just hanging up the
phone. No, but you could do it. You're 22. You could recover. This would actually be good for your career. Jobo.
Well,
no, it would. You came to me, I'm being honest here. If you came to me and you said, JD, I have a chance to be on Love is Blind. I keep wanting to say Love Actually. Which is,
I keep saying Love Island.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. And then there's Love on the Spectrum, which is my show. That's the one that I like the most.
Mm.
The only one that I've actually seen out of all these dating shows. That show is the best. The sincerity of some of those moments is like, I get choked.
It's very wholesome.
See, this
it's
is
very
how
wholesome.
The shows get you, man. No,
that
show, their claws
that
in
show's
you.
Different. That show's different.
No. Soon you'll be watching Love Island, Temptation Island, F-Boy Island.
No.
You'll be watching all of them.
There was one where everybody was naked, and I was like...
Naked Attraction? Yeah, what was it called?
That one I haven't dipped into.
Yeah, but it's like, why would you ever watch it? It's blurred.
Yeah,
there's
what's
no the point? Point? Yeah,
you might as well just watch Love is Blind.
That's what I'm saying. If it was unblurred, then I would obviously go check it out. It's not. So what's the point? See a bunch of blurred figures moving around. It's dumb as hell. Okay, so I would advise you to go on Love is Blind.
You advise me to go on
100% because you're 22 years old. So if you did get married to someone, you're at least young enough where
just write it off.
People could say you're 22 years old.
Yeah.
If Simon, myself, as a party, like any of us do this, people are going, what's wrong with you? You're in your 30s and you went on a show where you agreed to marry somebody. And you're like, yeah, but it was for fun.
But the connection we had in the pod.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, you would never recover from it. You just wouldn't. For you, it would be cool. All your friends would be celebrating the fact that you were on it. It would give you a lot of clout.
True. Yeah.
Plus, you're kind of geared for this, man. I feel like somebody could trick you into loving them in 5 minutes.
They could trick me into loving them?
Yeah, I think.
No, I fully agree.
I think a lady with a hot enough voice talking to you for 5 minutes would make
you. Are you kidding me? 100%.
Her husband.
100%. What are you talking about? It would even take five.
So, anyways, what's the deal with this? That's it. It's the pod show. People love it. And it was just delayed and everybody freaked out.
Yeah, and everybody was losing it.
It blew up the internet. And I just kept seeing it casually going, what's happening here? Simon will explain this to me on Monday on the podcast.
Yeah.
All
right. And that's it. So the big part of this show, right, is that like it leads up to the wedding day and like half the people say do the whole like, do you take this woman? And half the people say, I do not. And like the people's family and friends are there and stuff.
Oh, okay. So they are able to not.
Oh, yeah. But they are pretty late
to
in
be,
the game.
That has to be staged.
I love, though, that people are like, I do not. People are like, oh, all our friends and family are here for this stranger getting married.
Yeah. It's not staged.
People running out. That's brides running out. No, family, brothers challenging the grooms to fights.
No, but that's the this is where it does get silly and dumb because.
The whole thing is silly and dumb. I'd like to reiterate.
If you were the father of a bride, or any father, mother, whatever, any parent, sibling, anything. If your family member was at an altar with a stranger off the game show and you had the out and you knew that it was better for the television that they not get married, you'd be sitting there going, you're obviously going to say no and get the pop for TV and fake fight the brother-in-law.
Yeah, just go challenge someone.
They say I do, and you it's pulmonary embolism.
Here are the best outcomes. The first person says I do, and then the second person says I hear that.
No, that
and I do not.
No, but that actually is a nightmare for you and your family if you're part of the I do side of this. It's like you're in the car ride home, and he's in the tuxedo, and you're like, so you really gonna do it, huh?
You guys wanna go to dance?
And you'd have to be like, oh, the production team was pretty heavily involved in the decision and they told me what was gonna happen. I was in on it. That's a party line you gotta have for the rest of your life. I was in on it.
It's like that super awkward silence after you like break a stick at your hockey game and your dad's driving you home and he's just looking at you and you don't want to say anything because you're so embarrassed.
Yeah, that's a crappy ride home too.
That's a bad one.
I would say that trying to get married and to a stranger in a public venue, Joe, is very, very
that's what just it reminded me of it.
Okay. What's next?
So let's do some rapid fire NBA stuff because it was a big playoff weekend. So first off, I think the big story is a lot of injuries to guys. Giannis back, Morant hand, Tyler Hero broke a hand and then hit a three with a broken hand, which is pretty cool. Any of those injuries like change how you're feeling?
Every single one of them is a massive injury. Like, okay, so it's I kind of agree with the take out of the Giannis injury that a lot of people are having, which is maybe they're going to legislate out that charge, the Kyle Lowry.
I think they got it.
Yeah, but I really do think that if the Bucks lose that series and Giannis can't come back, or the Bucks aren't the same and that materially changes who should be the favorite for NBA champions this year, that's going to have a real legislative ripple effect to me about the game, which... Yeah, the points people are making are pretty good. I'll admit that when I'm playing hoops and if someone jumps underneath me, that's when I'll go full snap show. That's when I'll freak out.
It's like undercutting stuff. It's brutal.
Incredibly dangerous. For some reason, you really don't think about it as much with charges. At least I haven't. And I love basketball. Played my whole life. Both my parents are coaches. Like, it's my first love of all sports.
Yeah.
Number one thing that I first started watching. And the jump underneath charge always did feel like something different to me. Like it was a smaller player and you were the one that was taking the risk, right? Because you're the one jumping in to take that charge. A lot of times it's, oh, here comes someone barreling down on me.
There's a knee coming
towards
my head.
And then you see the way that Giannis got hurt and you go, ooh, right. This does have that effect. Anyway, so the way Giannis went off, I just don't, back is, this sounds so stupid and obvious, but backs are tricky. The idea that he's just going to be at 120% a couple of days later seems a little odd, but also it is an important reminder that Giannis is not built like the rest of us where we sleep wrong and it's just, your back has changed forever. You put your head on the pillow too fast and now your neck
is just dizzy and you can't see.
Yeah, exactly. You're just done. So I'm the most optimistic about coming back from all of these.
I think
other
they said the X-rays came back clean and yeah, stuff.
Oh so yeah, we'll but see. That's of course he was going to have a broken back.
Just, yeah. This is the update.
But the team did say that they're going to see how he feels this morning and then just decide for Wednesday.
Yeah, but the other two injuries, obviously Tyler Heroes and Jaws, gruesome.
Yes.
Jaw
really
landed
bad.
On his hand.
No, there's no way Jaw isn't going to be affected by that for the rest of the series. And now they're already down a game, and the Lakers look like they're kind of hitting a different stride, and that Grizzlies team has no front court depth.
No bigs.
Right? It's just inside for LeBron and AD is just, it's available, right? Rui Hachimura is all of a sudden like, I can do stuff in this
series.
Austin
Reeves is hitting shots.
Yeah, no, I just think that this was a weird nightmare season for the Grizzlies, and this is going to be you're just doing a hard reset. It's over. Yeah, yeah. It's done, and I'm sorry, but yeah, Ja Morant is hurt. And without Ja being able to be spectacular, I don't think they ever had a shot anyways.
Not a shot.
And so that series to me is done. The other one, I couldn't believe the Heat showing. Mm. I was really impressed by it. And Jimmy Butler
in the playoffs, man.
I know.
Playoffs.
It's so crazy. He genuinely, obviously if he pulls this series off, Giannis or no Giannis, it's like, I love having my awards or my statue or my, you know, like where I'll say, hey, it's the Jason Spezza Award
for
the Blue Jay or the
villain to hero.
Yeah, the villain to hero award or what could be the narrative redemption arc would could be end up being the Kikuchi Award.
Yeah.
Like for just clutch player in any sport who can just take it to a different level and go from, yeah, this guy's a good all-star to, oh, yeah, this guy is LeBron, essentially, come postseason time.
Playoff Jimmy.
There's not a ton of players that are quite like Jimmy Butler, where you live in complete fear of them for this amount of time on this many pretty much mediocre teams, right?
Yeah.
Like, the best team he played on was that Philly team that Toronto beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that's the best team that he's ever had. It wasn't any of the Bulls teams.
Definitely
like,
the most talented team he's ever had,
maybe,
for sure.
Anyways, I he's spectacular. But to me, the fun thing about the playoffs so far, I need seven of Kings.
Yeah, 100%.
So I was teasing this a little bit on the actual radio portion of the podcast. That final couple minutes in the Kings-Warriors game, I kept going, who do I really want to win? Because I've always liked the Kings.
Yeah.
And I've actually always liked the Warriors, too. My uncle had season tickets to the Warriors when I was growing up, so every time we would go visit them, we'd be able to hit the odd Warriors game. I grew up with, like, a random amount of Golden State Warriors jerseys.
And
like
Biedrinch? Did you have a Biedrinch
I never
jersey?
Had a Biedrinch, but that was a Latvian huge moment legend. For, the Latvian community.
Let's go.
Obviously, that was a massive one. But, like, I had Chris Mullins, and I had Tim Hardaway, and... what else did I have? Oh, I really loved Monta Ellis. So like I had his anyway. And then, but it was funny because they went from having the nicest uniforms ever, which are just like the dark blue and the dark blue,
the red and the gold.
Yeah. And no, then they went to add that red and they did the ugliest thing, which was the guy holding
the
lightning bolt.
Holding
a lightning bolt guy, the Baron Davis jerseys. Those are all-time horrific. Anyways, but I've still always had an affinity for the Warriors, and then they became such front runners. Raptors played them in a playoff series. I don't feel they've just changed. They've taken on a completely different thing. But there's potential for Steph Curry versus LeBron in the second round.
Yeah,
that's very true.
That's the only thing that is just not letting me. I was all in on like the beam.
Yeah.
I love Fox. I love Fox back to Kentucky when his team lost and he cried in the locker room.
Heart, you could just tell his heart was broken.
And
unreal
debut. I take
debut.
That guy first overall because he's just the heart of a
he's
champion.
Got the passion.
And man, I love Sabonis.
Yep.
I'm a Malik Monk guy. I kind of like the idea of Harrison Barnes getting to stick it to his old team and him and Wiggins having the who is the true Harrison Barnes?
Who's
like,
the more Harrison Barnesy guy?
Who's more Barnes?
There can only be one, you know? It's just, I love that. It's a great series. Steph was making some insane shots down the stretch, too, where you're like, oh, my God, man. Like, the one he made in the corner where Clay almost dribbles at the clock and throws it to him 1 second, and he just catches it, falling away, just drains it, and you go, it's insane that we've had this.
Like, how are you real?
So I'm torn between my love of the Kangs and my desire for LeBron
versus
Steph.
What does your gut tell you?
LeBron versus Steph. I'm
That's
a big NBA. I've loved it my whole life, league. And the idea of not ever getting to have those two guys.
Well,
in the
and
series.
That could be the last time we ever see them in the playoffs against each other.
It just feels so wrong because my Kangs and I love the Kangs.
And you want to see them light the beam just because Fox is such a fun player to
watch.
Well,
that building packed
was
and so into
no,
it.
Those Sacramento fans are the real deal.
Oh,
if you remember back
they
to
deserve
Arco
that.
Arena.
They deserve that.
That's, again, I also grew up loving the Kings. I had a white chocolate jersey. I loved Bibby coming out of Arizona, and he went over there. Mm-hmm. I was a huge C-Web guy for a little while, even though I also did have the Warriors affinity, and so people hated him from the Warriors standpoint.
Yeah. Peja? Yeah. You like Peja?
Of course, I love Peja. I like Vlade.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I liked a lot of those Kings teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I used to root for them against the Lakers, and they represented the hope. Like, yeah, Brad Miller.
Those jerseys were so clean, the old ones.
Yeah, so anyways, no, I like the Kings a lot. I've always been a Kings guy, even to the point where I never wanted them to move for, Seattle to get a team. Like, I never wanted that. So, anyway, I'm torn on the series. I'm going to be that way the entire time.
We need
I'm trying
games,
to enjoy
though.
It. Or, I'm sorry. I'm trying to enjoy just the full experience of it. But, yes,
I think deep down,
because, dude, this is how I am with sports, is I like when there's more people under the tent. That's why I've never understood the whole people hating bandwagoners thing, where they get mad about bandwagon takes. I think I had that maybe when I was younger, where I was like, oh, the bandwagoners, when I sports.
That's what I kind of have right now.
But that's where sports was such a hardcore part of my, like, identity. Mm. And, you know, you have that phase in your life where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm a sports guy. So I don't want the bandwagoners. I want the hardcore.
The true,
you
the
gatekeep
real.
Everything.
No, but now my favorite thing is when everybody's in on something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the idea that we could do LeBron versus Steph on the pod and have everyone basically going, yeah, no, I'm
dialed
following
in.
Along. I want to know what your thought is on this.
Even the most That's casual it. Fans would be locked in on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because
I know
if I do Minnesota-Denver takes on my show, no one's
going to... Do you have any new Kyle Anderson takes?
No, I don't.
After he tried to fight someone again at the end of the game?
Yeah.
I thought Rudy Gobert was going for him again. Started walking towards
Big
him.
D's, nobody said bless you.
Bless
Thanks
you.
For that.
Bless you.
You know, sometimes it takes, that was basically a trust fall, and you guys let me just
wasn't even
crack
a real sneeze.
No, but I wasn't
going
to mention the sneeze, because we have the cough button, so I was like, I'm not going to say anything, we're just going to keep rolling.
Oh, you were such a pro,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
just such a pro.
I have a lot of years of experience here, Jay.
Exactly. Anyways, all right, let's keep it moving.
Two quick last NBA things.
Okay,
like the beam, the gimmick. You're a fan?
Oh, yeah, huge fan.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Are you worried that other teams are going to try to copy
yes.
it
I was just
going forward?
I was just going to say that the only downside of like the beam is that there will come a day where it has to go, but they will never retire it too soon. It will always be something that...
We'll see your hero become a villain as you
yeah,
just...
Yeah, it'll just... Aww. One day, it won't be the right guys connected to it, and it just won't work. Although I will say that it kind of does feel like one that could be eternal for a very long time. Like, light the beam.
I hope so. It's hilarious. Just,
yeah,
it's amazing. I don't want, like, the Charlotte Hornets to have some dumb thing where they put
no,
up, like, a spotlight when they win.
No,
and,
but
like,
gonna.
That's the...
They're gonna. They're gonna. Ugh. What are you talking about?
Pretty soon every team is a beam.
Yeah,
no. Everybody's gonna do a thing like
a different
this.
Form of light.
No, they're gonna. Yeah, they're gonna do stuff like this.
I don't
everybody's
like that.
Gonna do it. It's this. It's awful. I will say though. Yeah. Again, in terms of things, like a lot of this stuff usually is very temporary. Like my biggest go-to with this is when the Jays in 2015 had What a Feeling, then they brought it into 2016, and you went, nah, it's lame now. That was last year.
Yeah.
That was that. That was this moment in time. And now you tried to make it like, oh, let's keep doing the thing we do. And you're at regular season games, and they would play it every single game during 2016. You go, this is really cringe now. I don't think the beam is going to become that, because it's just light the beam.
Yeah.
It's just a fun thing.
Well,
light,
I do remember.
Raise the flag, light the beam. You know, it works.
At the beginning of the year, like when they first put it in, like a lot of the comments are like, oh, they're not going to be lighting that very often, stuff like that. And they ended up winning like 46 games, going
it.
To the playoffs, three seed.
No, but that's
like,
why.
Oh,
but
goodness.
That's why it made it even sweeter. Is
well,
because
the
there was
the
low expectations,
like,
and they were really, really good.
Yeah.
And and everyone starts rooting for the downtrodden franchise like that. When they first have their climb back up.
Their fans deserve that. Like, their fans deserve a run.
And, it's not exactly a market where people want to dunk on them, right? It's not Boston. Like, if the Celtics had been banned for a really long time, they started being good, and they had their own light the beam, no one would be like, yes, in other markets.
No.
You know, Kings is a different thing. So, people are going to copy it. It'll be interesting to see who does what first, but whatever does get done will be lame as
It'll
hell.
Be worse.
Yeah, it will be.
The last NBA thing, Austin Reeves, we kind of mentioned this, big in game one, 23 points. I think it was 14 in the fourth quarter, and he had that moment where he hit that cool little floater and yelled, I'm him.
Yeah.
Have you ever had an I'm him moment in your sports playing
career? Of course. Of course I've had I'm him moments. Actually, one of my favorite ones ever for me, ever with an I'm him. A couple. I think that you grow up, you play a ton of sports, you just have those ones that you cherish the most. But I remember I played my dad's high school one year, and like he was a teacher at it. He was a VP actually for a little while there. He was vice principal, and I went and played his school, and I had definitely over 30 points, but I also hit a buzzer beater to win the game in the gym, and it was like almost from half court.
Oh,
and
my
it
goodness.
Was definitely a chuck, like, but it was like out of a timeout. I got the ball. I dribbled like two dribbles down the sideline, like pumped a long three, and it, I'm pretty sure banking in. It went banking in because I remember the guy trying to defend me, like doing the full eye roll, like, oh, lame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for me, I was like, first of all, I scored like all of our team's points in this game. And it was, oh, this was the coolest thing about it. The reason why it was such a great, it was a day game where we got to go play their school. So like their whole school was watching the game.
It's one of those. It was like a during the day tournament.
Yeah, it was like a during the day game where like the whole school actually fills in, because Canada basketball, listen, let's be real here. When you play your night games, there's like maybe 40 people watching.
You're not setting attendance records, yeah, that's for sure.
Exactly. Like there's not that many people watching. It's a lot of parents, but not a lot of
for
other
my high
students.
School is always the first game was like really busy. Yeah, 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 and then yeah. after,
and
that,
then after
just,
that, exactly. Yeah. So it's a peter out, some people come in, do whatever. But no, ultimately this was a day game where it was like the gym was packed. And yeah, I scored a ton of points.
People were leaving class to come watch.
Yes, and I cooked their school, and yeah, I hit a ton of threes. I remember I hit like 6 or 7 threes, all from like the same area of the floor.
You're gonna retire your jersey up there.
Yeah, no, it was a really sick game where it was just like I was hitting my step back, like Simon knows my step back. Yeah. Really, right to left step back, and I was just drilling it over and over and over again, and then I hit the buzzer beater walk off. So that's like definitely my number one I'm him story. The Austin Reeves thing is fascinating, but I can't believe you guys didn't do Russell Westbrook almost getting into it with Fan. We're in like the fan fight.
Yeah, so like Russ at the end of the game, there was a fan that was like sitting on a couch. It was a weird little area there where like Russ was walking through,
it was,
and
like
then
the suites or something. That guy must have been rich.
Yeah,
I love that. Okay,
I don't know where that was, but
so Russ almost gets into it with Fan, and there's two things that are my favorite thing about this video. Like Russ is completely unhinged with this stuff at this point. Like, and correct. First of all, there's a kid that's sitting right there.
There's a kid sitting on the chair.
And like, unless that fan said something horrific, 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 horrific about like Russell Westbrook's family.
Yeah.
Then it's just insane behavior by Westbrook to be doing this stuff. Yeah. And to be doing it in front of a kid is just like the threat of violence in front of a child. And
Russell saying, watch your mouth. And
not so behavior. But I do love that guy who is max half the size of Russell Westbrook, who would get... What do you, so I, me and Hayes, actually, we have a game we call Poison Chamber, and it's like, how long would, if you put two people into a little box, like with not a lot of room, it's usually a broadcast
booth. Like a telephone booth?
Because this started with broadcast booths with like the play-by-play guy and analyst, right? So it would always be funny, like if Kevin Burkhardt and Greg Olson were put into a booth and it said, it's going to fill with poison until one of you is dead, how long would Kevin Burkhardt survive? So that is the game Poison Booth, okay?
And poison booth.
Yes, if Russell Westbrook and that guy were in Poison Booth together, I think Russ would kill him in maybe 13 seconds max. I think that guy survives. It might even be less. It might even just be like 3 seconds.
16 for every shot he missed.
It's like the over-under is 13 and a half, like seconds. That's how long that guy has to live. He's so dead. The poison doesn't even get up to, you know,
like the knees.
Sneakers. Yeah. So I love that he stood up, but the part that I hated because it gave me PTSD is as Westbrook's leaving. Do you have the audio, Austin?
Of Russ yelling at the fan?
No. Of that whole exchange anywhere?
I do not, but I can get it one second.
Try to get it. If you don't get it, it's fine, because I'm just going to say. So after it happens, there's some guy that is totally a kiss ass to Westbrook, which is the worst, where he's like, yeah, Russ, you're the man, Russ. And then there's this lady that's like, Westbrook. And yeah, she yells it
the best part
as
of the
he's almost gone. And all
he's like down the tunnel already.
Yes,
he's gone.
And all I could think of was him turning around and coming back in, because he's not going to hit the lady.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a guy there that's going to have to go like, oh, no. And he's going to get filled in. And this is one of life's worst experiences. And I have had it happen to me where you're in a confrontation with another group or another person.
Right.
And then like somebody in your group, a lady friend in your group starts to get like way too aggressive with the trash talk. And it's like, you're not going to fight.
Yeah.
We are going to fight.
You're
going to
get us killed.
We are going to lose. It happened to me in first year university where I was out at a pub and fake ID. Like I was 18 years old.
I was about to say, first year out at a pub?
Dude, I was out at a pub, fake ID for sure. And we were out there with what felt at the time probably like the most grown men. And they were probably like 24. But these guys at the bar, same thing. Like we kind of got into it. It was a little bit of nothing. And there was one girl in our group that would not shut up and was like yelling at them and calling all the worst names. And then they came back at us, and then it ended up being a fight, and it was like, we lost.
You guys got filled in because they were...
Yes, 100%. Like, cut. our heads boxed in by these older, stronger fellas. And it was all because this one girl yelling. And everyone's experienced that. Like, you guys know how I had that? Like, I don't know about you, Jobo, but like, yeah. There's always like that one girl who's like talks way more trash and like has the just completely emboldened to be like, here I am. I'm saying this now. Sassy this.
Well, and you're just like standing there like trying to avoid eye contact with the other group. Yeah, and you're just like, shut.
Or you're just like, and there's just nothing you can do in that situation other than prepare to die.
No, literally. Just prepare to fight or... Yeah, just you just gotta wear it at that point.
You get it? No? All good. Whatever. If you get it,
we're trying to bleep out the he swears in it, so we gotta bleep out the swear.
That makes sense. Just buy some
bleep
sensor.
It in post.
Fix it in post. Fix it in post.
Fix it in post. It's a bleep out the
fine,
swear.
JD. You which get is, what you want here.
What's the swear? Take it like a man. I love that. See that little dude standing up, take it like a man. I love that.
Talk about it, be about it.
Love that. People are just involved. Yeah, see?
West Brick.
See, she did
West Brick.
Like, right as the situation, that's always the way it is with that lady, you know?
Yeah. Situation's cool.
Whoever that girl is, their situation's just like, all right, we're coming down. Like, it's reached its detente. And then she has to be like, you're this.
Well, as soon as the guy says, talk about it, be about it, Russ is already halfway down the tunnel.
I know.
Like, he's already back turned. He's gone. Yeah. And then, like, 3 seconds later.
So, to any of our female listeners on the show, I would just say, please don't do that to us.
You know? None of my friends are listening to
me. Yeah, please don't do that to us if you ever presented with the situation. Because, there's nothing worse than getting clobbered over one of those. Especially
there's
when you
nothing
know,
we can do.
Especially when you know the other guy is a Westbrook, where he's going to just clean your clock and you have no shot. It's like, my boyfriend will do this. You're like, no.
That is the worst feeling, going into a fight, being like, how badly am I going to lose?
Well, because, but also, you have to do that. You have to defend the girl that you're with. And it can be your female friend, whatever. It's just like there's going to be the situation where you have to step up and you have to be the one who gets absolutely cold cocked. So not a great feeling. I don't know. Anyway, what's next?
So over the weekend, there was a story that went viral from the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum about a possum that invaded the visiting announcing booth. So the Mets were in town over the weekend, and obviously Gary Cohn and Ron Darling got booted out of that booth and had to go in a booth that was blocked by a pole because they. Like, the possum's business was in the other booth, and apparently, like, the employees have tried to set traps. They have
when
not been able to catch it.
Possum's business, do you mean it's crap?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Well, like, it's crap. Like, it's home. There's, like, food in everywhere.
His business. He had his little establishment set up down the road. I was like, what's happening here?
Yeah. He's running a team up there.
Possum had a house, and then he also had a business, and they were in separate locations.
Well, I said Possum's business to, you know, but yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's unrelated. So they got booted out of there and had to, and so now visiting announcers have to go into a different booth, and like...
Yeah.
How much longer do the A's have in Oakland, do you think?
I hope forever, because I love the Oakland A's. And yeah, so it's like, if you want to talk about all-time uniforms across any sport, Oakland absolutely
has it. I
have
a Chapman one. I have a Chapman green one.
This is going to probably get me into a little bit of heat from Blue Jays fans, but like, Tigers were in town, I'm at that game, and you're sitting there, you're looking at Tigers fans gear, and that stuff's eternal. Like, you can be in a business suit wearing a, like, the what's
D
the English
hat?
Font? Is that old English
Gothic or whatever it's called?
And that D hat, and it just looks so clean and crisp. And there's something about those like classic uniforms that
has the orange trim too.
No, but that's
like, exactly.
There's a certain amount of like uniforms across sports that you can just wear, and it just goes and it's fine. And Blue Jay stuff is just not that. There's like always going to be like a little bit of a childish element to Blue Jays gear. It just is what it is. It's like either you go with like the baby blue stuff, or you go with like it's just, it's not, it doesn't have like that. Even the retro look, it looks nice. I'm saying like I have a lot of Blue Jays stuff.
Yeah.
And there's even like a World Series champion t-shirt that's a vintage retro shirt that's at the team shop right now that I'm definitely going to end up buying because it's nice.
Yeah.
But Jay's gear doesn't have the same like, wow, that really just, you would love to be able to wear that hat.
I would
the
agree.
Same way as, but Oakland's uniform and their hat. That's like an all-time wow. And multiple uniform, like, or multiple, like, even silos. The elephant is sick. Like, A's are so, so nice. And, Oakland, the idea that they would lose another team after losing the Raiders. Like, I'm, like, in the Marshawn Lynch camp where it's, like, where he said, y'all lost the Warriors, then y'all lost the Raiders. Let's not lose the A's. That's how I feel about it, too. And so,
they do need to build a new stadium, though.
They got to build a new stadium, and that's sad. Especially since it's just, to me... I love that you're like, the team's staff had set out various traps, but the possum is loose. It's like, where's the exterminator?
I don't know. That's the thing.
They don't have a budget.
Every article I've read on it, it's like the team's staff is trying to catch it, and they just haven't been able
to.
And I'm
like, this is a tough one. All right. I'm just going to say it.
What?
just kill it. Because this is the thing. Because it's public, they have to like trap it and release it out in the wild or whatever. But it's yeah, like,
that's right. There will be a follow-up story.
Yeah, that, but you can't just kill this cat. Cat. Well, no. But dude, you know how many feral cats are in stadiums?
Oh, dude, you know how many possums are in the Oakland Stadium? They have a problem with it.
You think all those little kitties?
The Oakland, the A's Coliseum, like, they have a problem with possums. There's been, like, several spotted in the last bunch of years.
This is what I'm saying. It's like, it's... Like, it's a possum. Have you ever seen a possum up close? It's, like...
Oh, dude, it's a death machine.
Dude, even picture like it. Of it, like, cruising out of the top of the booth, I was like... And there was your kill shot, and you blew it because you were trying to.
I love the one shot though, because they have the cameraman still up there to get the best shot. So it's the cameraman just filming, and you see the possum just roaming around in the background. Like, poor guy.
Yeah, but also it must stink in there.
That's why they don't do the games from there anymore.
Well, that, and also, could you imagine the hilarity of, and also fear of the broadcaster that's like, and swinging a, oh my God, there's a creature emerging from the ceiling. Like,
well,
no,
so according to the Mets broadcast, apparently the possum is not invading the actual broadcasts. He's just doing his thing.
I love that. That's a nice stance from the stadium. Like, it's not that bad of a possum situation. It just stinks like possum poo everywhere.
It's just a possum taking over a room.
If you don't mind the horrific stench of possum poo and pee.
It's really not that bad.
If you don't mind the spell of
mostly
nature.
Mostly fine. Yeah,
it's
okay,
just nature,
what's next?
Fellas. So a man from China went viral for carrying around a portable sofa to put on trains because he was tired of not getting a seat. So he got an agreement with the Hangzhou Metro that he rides every day from the office to home to carry around the sofa, which he got a designer to create to have backpack straps. So he carries around the sofa like a backpack.
This is the lamest thing. He carries it around and pops it out on the train. Yeah,
pops it on the train, pops it on the... Yeah, anywhere. Anywhere he has to sit.
Could you imagine being on the train? And, like, if you see this on the train, first of all, you're already on the train. All you want, listen, as a daily rider of the train, here's what I want. No nuisance.
Yeah. I want to stand with enough space, and I want to look around and not think, I hate this person, which happens way too often.
Exactly.
Well, you're giant, Simon, in people's defense.
No, buddy, when you're on the train every day, it's, first of all, you're entering it during your commute. You're often tired, and all you want is just... Like, your threshold to hate someone is nothing. It's a little tiny piece of string frayed down the middle.
Holding on by a thread.
Anything someone does. Like, man, I see someone on the train and it's halfway busy and they have a bag on their seat.
Oh, my God.
I want to snap it. I have murder fantasies.
And you just stand there for the whole train ride thinking like this.
I hate you.
Oh, my God.
I hate your guts.
This guy
did. What kind of person raised you? I hope that something bad happens to you today. Like, someone gets on with too much perfume. Someone that wears their huge backpack and doesn't
put it on.
Yeah,
like, and you're just like, oh.
There's so many things that are just like tiny little details that non-daily commuters are always like, what's the problem with that? And you're like, shut up. You don't know anything. So the people that wrote this story that are like, and it's so cute. He brings his little couch on the thing. I would 1,000% see that. And just immediately be like, I'm want to smash this up.
Dude,
I'm gonna smash whatever
this is.
It's not a small
sofa either. It's huge.
No, this guy sucks. This guy is nominated for world's worst person.
World's worst person.
Jail, no chance of parole.
Yeah. The one thing
you
he did
suck.
Agree to with the metro system,
dude,
is that he was going to ride.
Like, it's jammed up.
Yeah.
Like, you're not getting on
metro
there. That
was part of the thing.
It's fun.
He agreed that he was going to ride in like off peak hours.
He agreed. You know what?
Apparently,
no.
According to the report.
I hate this guy. Anyways, he's got to go. The nuisance. If you're a nuisance on the train, you absolutely have to go.
No, I agree.
And if you're, putting your bag on a seat, jail. I'm Fred Armisen here, where it's like, seat on a chair, jail. Eating food during peak hours too close to someone, jail. Yeah, like wearing too much perfume,
jail.
Jail. Yeah, it just, there's so many things. Backpack on, not putting, taking it off during peak hours and putting it in front of you and putting it on the floor,
bringing
jail.
A couch on the train, jail.
Execution.
Yeah.
Yeah, no jail. Solitary confinement on Moon Jail. Anyway, all right, what's next? I love the OBJ one. Let's do that.
Yeah, so OBJ claims that he's always been an underdog. It was an immediate availability over the weekend. So, by the way, he was like all-state receiver in high school.
Yep.
He was picked 12th overall, standout athlete in multiple sports. LSU is ridiculous. Rookie
four-star
season ridiculous.
Recruit.
Four-star recruit. And like, this might be the only time in his career so far that you could even consider him an underdog. But when you look at the contract,
he's
it's
not
like,
an underdog. You got $50
million. Is he really? Exactly.
No. Okay. So I don't know Odell's like upbringing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I didn't want to like. I don't want to comment on that because I know he grew up in Baton Rouge, but sure. I don't know the details.
Well, I don't know. But yeah, sure. Exactly. I know where he grew up. Yeah. That's no
Baton bearing. Rouge, Louisiana.
I've never heard horrific stories of his upbringing, mm-hmm. which happens with some athletes where you're like, yeah, like Jimmy Butler, for example. It's like, yeah, Jimmy Butler's life is the, sad as hell.
He was faxing documents from a McDonald's.
Dude, like, yeah, he's had a really, really tough life. Yeah. Odell's not famously a horrific life. This is just your classic hilarity with athletes where they need to have a chip on their shoulder.
Need to have something.
And it's like, despite the millions of dollars, despite the fame, despite the success, no matter what, mm-hmm. like anybody who's any critical of them, they're like, I knew I'm an underdog. Nobody believes in me. It's like, actually, no, you're getting all of this money. You're on the cover of video games. You're one of the faces of the league. You're sitting courtside at the NBA All-Star
game. You have like the most viral moment in NFL history.
Yeah, exactly. You're the furthest thing for an underdog. The way that when this really ended, the underdog story was when the Patriots and Tom Brady, and when they won their last Super Bowl in New England, when the whole way there, they were like, we're underdogs. This is nothing new with athletes. It's just hilarious that these guys,
Travis Kelce did it too. After the Chiefs won, he said like, you all doubted us.
That's the thing. These guys need to have that motivation. They need it there as added fuel to whatever monotony they have in their lives of just being overly celebrated. They can turn that stuff into it. Mm-hmm. It's why people do fear the stuff like bulletin board material with media and fans or whatever, and why people get so upset about it, because they actually think that it has a tangible effect on what happens with these guys. But the actuality is, we could do, like, let this be known for Leaf fans with the Tampa stuff, because I'm going to get more into my preview tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We could all do nothing with Tampa Bay. We could all sit here every single day and go, Tampa's so good, Tampa's so great, Tampa's probably going to win, Tampa's going to probably win. They would still find a thing where it was like, someone said we were good, not great. And that would be the thing that they're trying to put out there and that they would say really affected them. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, this is the ultimate example of what you say does not matter to these athletes, because they will always find something. Odell Beckham Jr., who just signed a $15 million contract, is one of the most famous athletes on planet Earth. He's not an undrafted free agent.
Nope, 12th overall.
Like you mentioned, a four-star recruit, all of these different things. He's amazing at a million different sports because he's an incredible athlete. He's a good-looking guy.
Basketball, track, like, soccer, football.
What has been...
played like, everything.
Super attractive guy. No shot. There's been... He's life on easy mode in a lot of different ways, and he still feels like...
He was an all-state receiver at 15.
Yeah, he looks at... the bum on a subway and him, and he's like, we're both just out here grinding,
you and me,
trying
man.
To make it happen.
Just two guys tough on our luck.
Underdog.
Like, you are a model who's good at every single sport.
He sees Jim Abbott, and he's just like, we are the same, you and I, Jim Abbott. whatever. Anyway, so what's next?
So Gilbert Arenas had a wild take on the weekend on Gil's Arena, and he was talking about how home court advantage in the playoffs should be take it and you make it. So you have, if you're the home court team, you have home court until you lose it.
Yeah.
And then you go to, obviously logistically it would never work, but like theoretically, what do you think about?
Theoretically, it's sick.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it'd be pretty
King's
awesome.
Court. That's the coolest idea that you could possibly have. Theoretically, if the gyms were next door to one another, that would be great. Gil, with it, the idea of having to transport these people back and forth and just have the schedules of
and
this.
Planning out everything.
And also the fact that those arenas are not just occupied for professional sports teams. It's completely unhinged. But yes, the idea of it, I guess, is what is ultimately... This is a Hooper's idea. This is a guy who's just going, hey, this is how basketball is played, is you score, you get the ball.
Yeah.
You win, you keep
you win,
the
you
court.
Stay.
Yeah.
Well, it leads me to the next question of is there anything about the NBA playoff system that you would change?
You know what?
Anything that comes to your mind.
What would you do, Simon?
The idea that I always kind of liked was if you win the first seed in the conference, you pick your opponent.
Yeah, of course.
I love that.
I love that too. And every fan loves that. The only thing is that for whatever reason, it's just the risk of doing that is
for
so
sure.
Well, especially if you got to think about too, the general manager, the owner, the heat that you would take if you were the favorite and you lose.
Well, you want to talk about bulletin board material.
Yeah. That's what I'm
saying. The higher seed picks you and you beat them.
Right. And so it would make for incredible television. Yeah. It would add so much to the stakes. I think maybe someday it actually does happen because, again, it's only going to get more and more competitive to watch sports and live events. And so they're going to continuously have to reinvent things. Just like
they're going to have to ramp up the entertainment.
And that's the thing with baseball. If baseball really does see a resurgence in numbers and it's weird though with baseball right now because it's so much shorter. I keep thinking about the advertising dollars, like you have less commercials to sell. So are they more expensive and more ads? But whatever. Anyway, that all aside, I don't think there's anything in particular. Like, I really didn't think I would like the play-in games, and then they were actually pretty sweet, and I really did enjoy them.
And
it's also like, Grange pointed this out on Twitter actually the other day, where he went, yeah, it actually is so perfectly done in terms of the tiers of fairness that happen from finishing between the 7 and the 10 seed.
Yeah. Yeah.
From being like, you get to host two home games to, at worst, to you have to go on the road and win twice.
Yeah.
Right? It's just the way that it goes down from 7 to 10 is a really nice system.
Yeah.
And
a common one I've seen is like, there's no conferences. It's just like 1 against 16, right. 2 against 15, 3 against 14.
Can I tell you something though? I really don't want it for hockey. Because here's the thing with hockey. It's such a slog already, the regular season. It's so hard to get through it.
Yeah.
And making the playoffs is supposed to, like, that's why they need to change the playoff format again, because we were locked into some of these and it was so boring for so much of the year. But hockey, there is too much like bad bounce stuff in it. Or team gets hot at the right time thing. Mm-hmm. Like basketball kind of works because the 7 through 10 seeds, the idea that they're going to beat whoever they face in the first round is already so unlikely that it's like, cool, you actually get some added bonus games where you can talk about growth and there's some implication and there's a good, fun do or die game in your arena. That's great. Mm-hmm. With hockey, you saw it with Montreal.
Yeah.
You saw it when, you know, Columbus, whatever. These bad teams, when they had those play-in games, they have a legitimate shot to win over these short series.
Yeah.
And I don't think what hockey needs is more bad teams having the potential to just get hot at the right time and then go on runs and eliminate good teams.
You should have to earn the 8th seed.
That's what I'm saying. I don't like it. I think it's too random already that even a bunch of this, like the Leafs-Tampa series, so much of what pisses me off about this is, yeah, the Leafs are the better team, and I think that they're better in a lot of different ways, everywhere except for potentially the goaltending, but even that is not a guaranteed that Vasilevsky outplays Samsonov this time around. Mm-hmm. What a lot of this does come down to is the game is so random that the Leafs could lose some games on a couple of random bad bounces, and that's just hockey. That's the sport that your whole season can come down to, some bad puck luck.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't want more teams involved. I actually think that the Stanley Cup playoffs are perfect in terms of the amount of teams. They just need to figure out the format differently. But with the NBA, I do like this format. And I do wish, actually, like, if I could change anything, I'd be like, just make even more advantages for the better teams early on. Like, yeah, just make, figure out whatever the hell that is and give them more advantage, because I don't like upsets in some of these pro sports as much as people like them in the moment. Yeah. Just because, again, it's the same thought process that I have with the Kings and the Warriors thing. Is like, I ultimately, to me, you should build your product so that the end of it is the best result.
Best against
the best.
You
get the best two teams. Yes. That's the representation of it. That's why football has it really well done right now with their regular season, where it's like they give such a huge advantage now to the one seed in each conference, where they're the only ones that get to buy and then home field advantage the whole way. That's a sick reward. So I like the rewarding of the teams that get it done,
the one
and
I
not
saw,
rewarding teams that are down in the
corners.
Another
one I saw floating around was that some people are saying, like, give the home team 3 home games in a row. So you have a chance to go up 3-0 at home, and then it's 3-2, and then 1-1.
Yeah, like I said, I would be totally fine with that. Anyways, you guys want to do one more? What else we got?
Air New Zealand putting bunk bags.
Skip.
Don't care.
No, out. Yeah, airplane bunk beds, do not care. Because I'll never use it.
I was going to ask if you're ever going to use it.
No, like, that's it. Like, I'll never, ever get on a plane and go, like, yeah, first of all, I already get anxiety when I'm on a flight in terms of not being in control and feeling like I'm trapped. So the idea of, like, getting into a cattle-style
with 5
bunk
other
bed,
random people.
Yeah, buddy, what are you talking about? Like, no, this is insane.
That was my whole question, is you going to do it?
No.
So, clearly
next.
No.
New York City restaurants opening and charging $29 for a hot dog.
Yep.
Seems a little steep.
Well, especially since, like, the whole thing about America is that you can just go get cheap garbage food everywhere,
like,
all the
on
time.
The street.
Also, the best version of a hot dog ever.
Why
is
it $29?
Street meat ever. I don't know. Yeah. Is it some bougie New York restaurant? I mean, who knows? But do you have any, like, sporting event food that you get that you, like, even though you know it's way too expensive, that you got to get, like,
yeah,
as,
I mean,
part of your ritual?
Yeah. Well,
anything.
Yeah. So I will say this. There's definitely different levels and tiers of bargain eating at stadiums. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, I would say that the number one thing that I have to do that I know is that where I feel the most ripped off like that isn't in a stadium. It's at the movies.
Oh,
when you pay for extra butter on popcorn.
Yeah.
That is the,
like,
most.
The real butter, too.
That's
that is the most, like, okay, so you're going to charge me $14 or whatever for this large popcorn that cost you literally nothing to make.
You're going to charge me $68 to eat food.
And then it's going to cost me an extra, like, $3 for you to do, like, one or two pumps for the, yeah, exactly. Like, the raison d'etre, of the popcorn, you're going to sit there, look me dead in the eyes and go like, it's $14 for this bag of popped corn. Would you like the thing that makes it good for more money? The audacity
of
that.
So you don't just want dry popcorn?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Interesting.
The audacity of that is just, it's, and you, like I said, I do it every single time.
Got it.
There's no chance I wouldn't. Yeah. I love movie theater popcorn. Yeah. I've gone to so many movies just because I'm like, I could really go for a large Coke and a movie theater popcorn tonight. Mm. Like, yeah, sure, I'll see Wonder Woman. You know, like, I'm sitting there like, could not care less about anything. Yeah, she's a superhero. She's strong. She's going to win the war. All right, got it.
Yeah, she's going to kick everyone's ass.
Oh, sick. Oh, she looks like she's really down and out right now. Oh, wait.
I wonder if she'll come back.
Yeah, she found a way to win. Huh?
I wonder if she'll win in her own movie that she's on the poster of.
Who would have thunk it? She would be the hero at the end of the day. Yeah, so I've done, like, that's the most I feel ripped off. Because, like, if you're going to a stadium, like, the one thing I love about the Blue Jays is, like, you shouldn't have an excuse because you can bring food in. Mm-hmm. And so if you're hungry, bring your food in.
If you plan ahead.
I would say at any stadium, the only thing that I find to be the dumbest purchase is when people go pizza. When
right.
people go pizza and it's not like a luxury brand pizza, I'm always very confused by that move where I go, man, they're literally going to give you a free one of those if we win tonight. what are you doing?
Just get something else.
Just go get it anywhere. So you paying for it. It's not like they, you know, zhuzh it up a little bit. It's like, it's the same trash. So
it's just pizza.
Yeah. That one to me, I don't get that to me. I am a believer of if you're traveling and you're going to different stadiums to try one of their signature food.
Try the signatures.
Yeah. To go out and not just get the normal thing. I actually got into this a little bit with my family or with my brother at the last game we went to where.
In Toronto?
In a different city. And he went and got like the, cause I think a lot of people just get chicken tenders and fries. That's a pretty like classic stadium move.
True.
And I went, yeah, all right. But that's the same everywhere. So why don't you come get this? Like, you know, why don't we try this? And it's weird because it's kind of like being at an airport. Like I remember I was in Chicago's airport once and it was like, we got deep dish. And I was like, yeah, I'm in Chicago. We get some deep dish, you know? It's like,
and they're like, nice deep pie.
Deep dish is like, fantastic.
You're, like, you're an idiot. It's this is so not good. The real deal. You get a little box in an airport. So it's the same thing with a stadium where it's like, if you go to Memphis, you're not getting real Memphis barbecue at the stadium. You're getting some offshoot version of it. That's, but there's a little bit of something to it. Yeah. Like Azo, you're with me on this, like where it's like, yeah, you feel better, like you immerse yourself in the experience, like you're going whole hog. And I'm go full bore guy when it comes to the stadium experience when I'm somewhere else. Like I will eat the other food in the stadium. I won't just be like, I'm getting just the normal hot dog.
Chicken tenders.
The chicken tenders. I always get the other thing.
It's the poutine dog now.
Even if sometimes I will see someone enjoying their chicken tenders as I'm eating the fancier food at the stadium and going like, damn, those look really good. I would like that.
I mean, the tendies is a can't
miss.
Can I trade
you one of my items? And like, no. You had your chance to get the chicken tenders and you shamed us over it. So no, you didn't. Like, that is definitely the way that I am. All right. I think we're done for today, huh?
We did 55 minutes.
Yeah, we did a lot. All right, let's wrap it up. Subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars. And then, tons of Leafs Lightning stuff now.
We're here.
Playoff time.
Finally.
Yeah, so saving that for tomorrow. We'll see you then.